When I thought, what should I talk about this evening to do with Buddhism, meditation, making a life more peaceful, more happy, more meaningful, I looked at the date and it was Friday the 13th. Oh my goodness. So the topic of the talk this evening is superstition. I like Friday the 13th. I travel around so much. I try to always book my flights on Friday the 13th. Because even in economy class, you can always be guaranteed a couple of seats empty beside you. People are so stupid. It's actually good luck to fly on Friday the 13th. You have more space. And there's less queues at immigration. And you're still surprised, though, even in the aircraft, there is no row 13. I wish there was. I would sit there, and again, even on days which didn't have a 13 in them, I'd have lots and lots of space. I like exploiting people's superstition. But why is it that people do have superstition? People say these things and they take them seriously. How many hotels have I been in and there's no floor 13? Or if you go to Hong Kong, there's no floor number 4. Because 4 in Chinese is the same word as death. So there's never a floor number 4, or perhaps there is, and that's where the ghosts live, in Chinese hotels. Of course there's no floor number 4, but why do people do that? And they just follow this superstition. And one of the nice things when I became a Buddhist was say, at last, there's a path which hasn't got any superstition. It's rational. I was one of those people who liked philosophy and science, who followed things like, you know, that great philosopher Voltaire. I remember him writing, you know, about sort of the superstition of like these holy books. And he used to say, if there is a God, and if God was the author of any book, he'd be the author of human reason. And I thought, what a wonderful saying that is. Trust in your reason, in experience, to overcome so many of the superstitions which people carry around with them. And that's why real authentic Buddhism doesn't have anything to do with superstitions. There's not a superstitious part of our Buddhist community over here. In fact, if you go to traditional Buddhist countries, you will always hear that the Buddha statue should always face east. Where is our Buddha statue facing? Oh my goodness, that's facing west and a bit north. And in fact, when we started our monastery down in Serpentine, we built the hall. We got this great Buddha statue up there, and we put it in there. And then as soon as it was in there, the Thai people complained. They complained, and as soon as a senior monk came from Thailand, they said, these Western monks, these Australian monks, they just do not understand. They don't know what they're doing. The Buddha statue again faces west. It's going to be a tragedy. It's bad luck. Something rotten's going to happen. We've been there for 28 years. Nothing rotten has happened yet. In fact, lots of good things have happened. But when those Thai monks, at least this is the Buddhist tradition, real Buddhist monks, one of them was asked, he said, look, the Buddha statue is facing the wrong way. It's bad luck. You should tell these Western monks to move it. And he answered, madam, if the Buddha was upset, he would move around himself. And it never did. So obviously, our Buddha statue is very happy there. But it's true, the superstition which people have, and especially religion, is responsible for so much superstition. Look, Friday the 13th, where did that come from? Last Friday? They call it Good Friday. I call it Execution Day. Because that's what happened. That's why Friday was a bad day. And that's why 13, because in Christianity, 13 disciples is a Christian superstition. Nothing to do with Buddhist at all. So we should not worry about Friday the 13th is a good day to fly. And if you're in house number 13 on the street, well done, that's a good number. If you have other religions, fair enough, you're in trouble. But in Buddhist, you're safe. It's the same as I said, I think a few weeks ago, when people thought they were so superstitious about 2012. 2012, a bad year, the end of the world. They've seen too many movies. It's in the Mayan calendar. It's the end of the world. And what happens? I told everybody, if you're a Mayan, yeah, it might be the end of the world. Actually, they've all gone anyway, so it's bad luck to them. But for Buddhists, it's not 2012. That's again just for Christians. For Buddhists, this is 2,555. It's true, that's a Buddhist era. You ask any Buddhist, that's how we count the Buddhist year. We're way ahead of everybody else. Not only that, but as I said before, 2,555, that's a lucky number. Isn't it lucky, 555? And especially in places like Thailand, Cambodia, Laos. Because the number 5 in Thai is Ha. So this year is 2. Ha, ha, ha. A very lucky year, a very funny year. But you just come back to some of these superstitions which people have. I was very impressed when you saw like an authentic Buddhist. We don't do superstitions. So if anybody comes in here, if you like to bow to the Buddha, fine. If you don't like to, fine. But as I said before, if you do bow to a Buddha, what are you bowing to? Are you bowing to some god in metal? Is that what? Look, go and tap him, see if there's anybody in there. There's nothing in there, it's just a bunch of metal, okay? But it's a symbolism. So when I do my bowing, as I mentioned before, I don't bow to a metal statue. I bow to what it represents, and that takes away the superstition. I bow, when I first bow, I bow to virtue, to goodness. You know what I do that? Because I actually respect virtue. When I see really good people in this world, virtuous people, people you can trust, I think there's hope for our world. And so I respect virtue so much that I bow to it. And it also means I remember virtue is important. So every time I bow, I'm respecting it. Psychologically, it grows within me. It grows stronger because I'm remembering the importance. It's good to be virtuous. It's good to be trustworthy. It's good to be honest. If I say something, I really mean it. Yes, sometimes I make mistakes. Or sometimes, well, you know, it's a joke. It's not meant to be taken seriously. But actually, that's a good introduction to today's joke. Because I got some new jokes from a fellow over in Scotland. Thank you. I forget what his name was now. I think Sandy or something. Sandy's telling me these jokes. One of them was the joke of the easiest job in the world was being an Australian psychologist. The easiest job in the world, because all you do is say, good day, mate. How are you going? No worries. She'll be right. Next. That's really quite accurate. You know, positive attitude. You know, she'd be right. Off you go. But that's not true, obviously. So it doesn't mean I'm lying. I'm not breaking my virtue. You don't expect to be believed when I tell jokes. But I respect honesty that much. So I really try to encourage people to tell the truth. And also respect it so much. This is one thing I've mentioned before some months ago, and I repeat it here. Remind you, please value honesty so highly. If your partner tells you something which really hurts you, but they're honest about it, forgive them. If your children come and say they've got into drugs or got into trouble with the police, If they're honest about it, please forgive them. Don't punish them. Because I often wondered why it is there's so much dishonesty, even in a family, especially in a relationship. Why don't people tell the truth to each other? And when you ask the question, it's obvious, because they're afraid. They're afraid if they tell the truth to the people they love and care for, they'll get punished. They'll get scolded. They'll get hurt. And what that means is they hide the truth. And there are too many lies in society. So just have a rule in your family. If the truth is told, if you really are being honest, there should be amnesty. Just the NALA Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, run by Desmond Tutu, got the Nobel Prize, well deserved. If they confess honestly what they've done, even the most horrendous crimes, they're always forgiven. Which means it encourages admission of what you've done. Encourage honesty. Encourages in a family people sharing the truth with each other. Yeah, it hurts. We've done bad things. I've really hurt you by what I've done, but I'm telling the truth because I need your help to make sure I never do that again. But you can imagine what happens when we are scolded. We're shouted at. It means we won't tell the truth again. We will lie. So I value virtue, especially truth, when I bow down. Say, if you tell me the truth, even the worst possible thing, I will forgive you because I value the truth more than anything else. I want people to be honest. I want people not to lie. So I encourage it that way. And especially, you may not, in the real world, it may be difficult to do that to your partner. Hopefully you've got that relationship. You can tell the person you love more than anybody else, the one you live with, the one you've committed to. But please encourage your children to do that. Because when they get into trouble, they really need you, mummy or daddy. You know what happens? They come and tell me instead. They come and tell me, no, I'm pregnant. Can you please tell my mum? She'll kill me. So why can't you tell your mum? You know, you made a mistake. You know, just we do make mistakes in life. You know, the mother should not, you should not be so afraid of your mother and father. You can't tell them the truth when you made a mistake and got into trouble. So this is why I bow, because virtue. I bow to peace. When I bow down, peace is so important to me. Peace in my life, peace in my heart, peace in the community, peace in the world. Isn't peace important? Why is there not enough peace in your own life or in the world or in your office? Because we don't remind ourselves of its importance. So I bow down to peace. And the lastly, I bow down to compassion, because kindness is so nice in this world. When people look after each other, and they get you a cup of tea, and they see that, you know, you're sort of a bit upset, and they just come and say, how are you doing? Is there anything you want to say? Compassion is such a beautiful thing in this world. It's the opposite of, you know, people being selfish or being cruel or telling people off. There's enough of that in the world, and that takes away the beauty. That makes the world just, you know, really awful and sucks and just terrible. Why do people do such things? But you see compassionate actions. Oh, that gives you hope and joy in this world. It's a beautiful thing to see. So that's the third thing. I bow down to compassion, which means I remind myself it's important. I practice compassion more. Every time I bow down, it's important. Remember, Ajahn, be compassionate. And that means those things grow. So it's not superstition anymore. That Buddha statue actually helps me being a more virtuous, peaceful, compassionate monk. And so hopefully that's what you can do as well. If you've never bowed down before, remember, you're not worshipping an idol. You're worshipping virtue, peace, and compassion. Wow, I can bow down to that. I can bow down to that 100 times. Because I know it works and I value it. So we take away the superstitions and we replace it by something which is really meaningful. And when I learned such things from the teachers in Thailand, I thought, wow, I understand why we're doing this for. It's, you know, what Voltaire said, it's human reason, not just blind belief. Because of blind belief, we do some really weird and stupid things. Such as I've seen many people wearing strings around their wrists. White strings, red strings, all sorts of coloured strings, because it protects you from bad luck. I've seen many people die in car crashes with white strings on them. It didn't protect them after all. I've seen in Thailand they don't use these strings so much as they use these medallions they have around their neck, because they think it's going to protect them from bad luck. And this is actually how Buddhism, real Buddhism, dealt with such superstition. There are many scallywag monks who give out these medallions, but not someone like my teacher, Ajahn Chah. What he did once is to show you what a good monk does with these superstitions. There was a man who came to see him once and who asked for one of these medallions, a little Buddha to put around his neck, because he said he'd been drafted into the Thai army. And they were fighting battles on the border, you know, illegal wars which people didn't know about. And some of those soldiers were getting shot, even killed. It was dangerous. And he wanted a little Buddha to put around his neck to protect him from bullets. And Ajahn Chah said, we don't do that. You know, those medallions, you know, they're only little medallions, they won't help you. And he said, yes, they will. And I've been very kind to you. I've given donations in your donation box. I've fed you with food. This is the first time I've asked for anything. Show your gratitude, you ungrateful monk. So sometimes people are smart, they put you on the spot like that. But a good monk always lives up to the challenge. He said, okay, okay, I give in. I will give you a Buddha to wear around your neck, and actually I guarantee it will protect you from bullets. Oh, thank you, I knew you would. Please give me the Buddha. He said, you have to go and collect it yourself. It's that 3-meter-high Buddha in the main meditation hall. Put that around your neck, and I guarantee it will protect you from bullets. He said, that's the only one which will. Now, that's a great way to stop all this superstitious nonsense, because sometimes these medallion business, this was even years ago, you can actually, they sometimes sell those things for $1 million US. It's big business. They have magazines in Thailand where you can actually buy these things, get them online. It costs a fortune. It's a total waste of time, because even this story reached Australia. I remember cutting it out and keeping it somewhere. I don't know where it is now. It's about, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. A Thai general, you know, incredibly wealthy. I don't know where he got his money from. Let's not ask. But he bought one of these medallions for 500,000 US. A tiny little Buddha medallion for $500,000 US, about 10 years ago. And he was bragging about its power. He paid all that money because it would protect you from bullets. And in after dinner, in the officer's mess, he'd obviously, you know, had a few whiskies, and he was bragging about how his medallion would stop bullets. So he gave his army revolver to a major, a subordinate, and ordered the major to test the medallion by shooting him. It was an order, and the major followed the order. He pointed the gun at the general and shot the bullet, and the general, amazing, is that amazing? The general died. That's really stupid. You know, those things don't really help. If you really are you going to buy a medallion like that, the person selling it, say, can you prove it? I'll get the gun. And if, you know, if you don't die, then fair enough, I might buy it from you. No one will sell it that way. But some people, especially religion, you can become so superstitious. It's the religious bit is what tricks people. Because they say, no, religion is, you know, there is some weird stuff happens in religion. There is some strange things which the monks talk about. And I've seen some strange things in my life as a monk. But please don't allow that to make you superstitious at all in what you do in life. Instead of actually, you know, trying to have these charms to protect you, use much more common sense. Investigate, come and see, challenge. Think for yourself, for goodness sake. Because sometimes these superstitions are dangerous. One of the worst superstitions which I came across, which almost killed me, and it was not my fault, was a superstition in, this was in Thailand where I spent most of my life. I don't know if they still have the same tradition in Burma and in Sri Lanka, in other big Buddhist countries. But over in Thailand, they had the superstition that if you put the monk in the front of the bus, it would protect everybody behind. because the monk has good karma, so it will prevent from front-on collisions. And I remember this. I will never forget it. It's burnt into my brain with trauma. Was getting on a bus in the south of Thailand, which was going to Bangkok, and as soon as I got on the bus, the driver smiled, this huge smile. I didn't know why. Was he a good Buddhist? Was he happened to see a monk? No. The reason was because he put me right in the front seat, just next to the window, about this far from the window, seeing all the oncoming traffic. The reason he was happy I was there, because there was a movie on the sort of the TV screen in the front of the bus, which he really liked and he wanted to watch. And so there was the driver driving along watching the movie, and I was supposed to protect the bus from collisions. He thought, I don't really need to be careful now because there's a monk in the front seat. He'll do that job for me. My goodness, it was really close. There's big trucks coming right for you. That almost killed me. And just because of superstition, and it does not work. I must admit, I did try that a couple of times. You know, see if I could exploit those superstitions when I went on flights with Thai Airways. I was only got an economy class ticket, but I said, well, if you put me up front, you may... you may be safe. And they didn't do that. It was really unfair. But sometimes, again, those superstitions, you know, sometimes, number one, they can cost you a lot of money. And number two, it's really demeaning what religion is all about. Curses. Somebody told me just on the retreat, they thought they were cursed by someone and they got bad luck. Those people don't have power to curse you. If you really want to have a curse, you have to have very strong spiritual power. Just come off a meditation retreat with lots of meditation power. Like who? Like me. They're the only ones. But if you've really, you know, done a lot of meditation, you're really compassionate and kind, you'll never do that. But people fall into the fear of being cursed. An example of that... I was visiting my mother when she was still alive. She died a couple of months ago. I was visiting her in London, in her apartment. She was cooking my lunch. Now, for a monk who only eats once a day, lunch is important. You don't want it to get ruined when you've only got one chance. So when somebody rang the doorbell, I told my mum, you carry on cooking, I'm going to answer the doorbell for you. So I answered the door, and on the other side of the door was a lady. She announced that she was a gypsy. If you know the people in London, these are the wanderers, the travellers, I think they call themselves now. And one of the ways they could actually get some extra cash was go door to door selling little trinkets or pieces of heather, which you could pick up by the roadside for nothing. It was just, you know, a way of trying to wheedle some money out of people. And I was very respectful. You know, I'm a very kind monk, but I've got no money. So I said, thank you very much. We don't need any. I was very polite. But then she started getting aggro at me. And I don't stand for that. She said to me, if you don't buy this trinket, I will put a gypsy curse on you. That's what she said. Don't mess with monks. Because I told her, I stood up, you know, in my monk's robe and said, I am a fully ordained Buddhist monk of many years. My curses are much more powerful than yours. I was only playing around. You know my nature. But she took that seriously. My goodness, her face dropped, her eyes bulged. She turned around. She ran. I'll never forget that. I must admit, you know, I do apologize. That's not the sort of thing a monk should do. But I admit... I enjoyed it. She got what she deserved. Try and put a curse on me. I'll put a curse on you if you want to know what curses are. Because people have all these superstitions about Buddhist monks and nuns as well, don't you? Yes, you do. Great. So, and I'm going to exploit that to the max. If you're going to be stupid, I'm going to exploit that. If you don't put, be careful. If you don't put a donation in the box as you go out today, bad things will happen to you. Be warned. That tests your superstition, doesn't it? I forget, you'll be safe. Come on. We don't do things like that. But there's a lot of people that actually believe those curses. And the thing is, if you investigate and find out the reason those curses work is not because they've got inherent powers, because you believe they'll work. That's all. If you really are so superstitious, yes, I've been cursed, I'm going to have bad luck, then you get bad luck. Number one, you worry so much, that's why you get the cancer, not the curse, because you worry, oh, something wrong could happen. Because the power of the mind, that's what we do know as monks, as meditators. I read this when I was a student, because I was always interested in weird things. I gave a talk this morning about weird things in the retreat center. I love weird things. Anything weird, please let me know, and I'll let people know in the next talk. One of the weird things which I remembered was an experiment which was done in psychology over 113 years ago, 1899. It's a very famous experiment, but a very macabre experiment. There was a poor man in Bristol jail who'd been sentenced to death by hanging. In those days, small crimes, you'd be killed. And the sentence was going to be carried out the following morning. Two psychologists got permission to try this experiment. They went to him pretending to be officers, you know, of the prison or the government. And they announced to him that the law had been changed. It was a lie, it's part of the experiment. The law had been changed. He was still to be executed the following morning, but by having his throat cut, not by the noose. And they left him to think about that all night. It's a terrible thing to do to somebody. In the following morning, at dawn, they came to him again. And they blindfolded him, and they took him to the place of execution. They gave him his last words with a priest, and one of the psychologists pulled a knife across his throat. The blunt end of a knife. It didn't even scratch him. At the same time, the other psychologist turned on a tap in the basin. It was a prison washroom they had taken him to. And this man, he'd felt cold steel against his throat. He heard a gurgle of liquid coming out, and he fell to the ground and died. It was a macabre experiment. He literally thought himself to death. He'd been thinking about it all night, and all it needed was just a little few of the things he expected, the cues. Cold steel against his throat, some liquid coming out, and that was enough, had enough power to cause him to die. That is how superstition works. Curses. If you believe it, it works. That is the problem. And as a monk who meditates, you know how this mind works. That is an example. Now you know how you can get exploited by superstition. If you believe it, it's likely to work. But if you don't believe it, you are free from all that superstition. You don't need to worry about Friday the 13th. Or actually, in China, so getting number plates on your car, 444. Die, die, die. You are perfectly safe. And you won't put a monk in the front of the bus and forget to pay attention to the road. And you won't worry so much about all this other rigmarole of religion, which is a lot to do with superstition. Just believe it, because your parents believed it. It must be right, because your mum and dad did it. I told a few people this, because I couldn't figure out why it is, especially in Chinese temples. If you go to places like Hong Kong, Malaysia, You go to a Buddhist temple there, even here in Perth, you go to a Buddhist temple, and people put a whole heap of incense into the burner. And before they put it into the burner, they take it in their hands and they shake it, first of all, before they put it into the burner. And we never did that in Thailand. We just light it and put it in. Just bung it in. It's done. Where's all this shaking coming from? And I discovered the reason for that superstition. The reason was this. Because I know it's the same in Thailand, Sri Lanka and Burma and any of these Asian countries. It's usually your grandmother takes you into the temple when you're a young girl or boy, first of all. They take you into the temple to show you how things are done. And all these young girls and boys who went to the temple the first time with their granny saw their granny shaking the incense. But the reason why granny shook the incense was because she was so old she had Parkinson's disease. It wasn't something she had to do. And because of that, now all the young people, they shake this as if they've got Parkinson's disease too. And they put it in there. It's total superstition. Now that's how these things actually occur. That's where they come from. You don't need to do that. Just bung it in and stop shaking it all over the place, for goodness sake. And if you do that, that's the same way. People ask me about all these things, about why you can't bring shoes into a Buddhist temple. You've all done that. You all leave them outside, don't you? Have you ever thought why? Or are you just so superstitious? There's a reason for that, a logical reason why you leave your shoes outside the temple, especially when the monk or a nun is giving a talk. And the reason is, because if he says something wrong, especially a bad joke, you've got nothing to throw at him. So I'm perfectly safe. I'm sure some of the jokes I've said here, I'd have got a whole shoe rack thrown at me sometimes. So look, don't be so superstitious. But now, holy water. Do you like holy water? Does holy water do anything for you? It actually, it does. It does. It makes you wet. But that's about all. Because sometimes I do holy water for people, and again, just, you know, it gives them some inspiration. It just encourages them. But that's all. It's got nothing intrinsic to it. But there was one lady here. You know, she died a long time ago, but she was in a wheelchair. She was very sick, and she really pleaded with me for some holy water. So every Saturday, I'd actually get her a bucket. Now, a whole, you know, I don't know, was it 10 litres or 11 litres bucket full of holy water? I'd make it for her. And, you know, I'd do it, sort of, you know, all the ceremonies and rigmaroles for her, because, you know, she was really sick, and I thought I was being kind to her. But you know what she was doing with that holy water of mine? She was bottling it and selling it on. She had a nice little earner going, a nice little business. Until someone, one of her friends, this Chinese guy, he rang the monastery, "Can I speak to Ajahn Brahm?" I said, "Yes, speaking." He said, "I want to buy some holy water." I said, "I don't sell her well." "Yes, you do." He said, "I'll get it from this lady. It's very good stuff, but I just want to cut the middleman out and get it from the source." So that's how she got busted. I never gave her any holy water again. She was selling the stuff. But this is what my teacher did when I was there at the time. He never did holy water. He would, you know, teach people about meditation, ask them their problems. That's what Buddhism is supposed to be about. You know, giving talks like this, you know, making people wiser, happier, freer. That's what this Buddhism is supposed to be about. But anyhow, one day again, a major general in the Thai army came to pay respects to Ajahn Chah. Now, these guys were really powerful. You know how many coups they've had in Thailand? So these are people you don't mess around with. They've got very good, great power. Even monks as well have got to be a bit aware of, like, looking after these generals. So he came to ask for holy water. And I was there at the time. And Ajahn Chah didn't have any holy water next to him. Says, come here, bend over. And this general bent over. And Ajahn Chah... he did. He spat on this general's head. And then got his hand and rubbed it in. And I thought, you've gone too far, Ajahn Chah. You know, sometimes even holy monks push their luck a bit too far. I really thought he'd gone over the top. But I saw this general just smile. He loved it. This was real holy water. You know, right from the mouth of a holy monk. He got away with it that time. But how superstitious can people be? That then they accept that as something very wonderful. Yeah, I do holy water. We've got a big bowl of it over there. And on Sunday, we have our Songkran Day. That's the Thai New Year, the Sri Lankan New Year, the Burmese New Year. You know, many other religions do the holy water business. But for me, it's just like a celebration, that's all. So don't think the holy water is going to cure your cancer. You know, make sure that you're irresistibly attractive to your girlfriend. It's not going to make you win the lotto. That's the other thing which I really, really don't like. Because in all these lotto shops, I don't know where this custom came from. They have, you know, the fat Buddha. Do you do that when you buy a lotto ticket? Have to rub the belly of the fat Buddha? Please don't do that, because this is the consequence. This is the consequence of that superstition. I was in that room over there a year ago, and this Chinese woman came there. They saw me. She said, I'm going to buy a lottery ticket, and she rubbed my belly. She did that. Yeah, okay, I'm a bit overweight, but that's no reason to rub my belly for good luck. I could make a fortune now if I stood by the lottery store. So there's too many of these superstitions go around, and that's why the people lose a lot of money on the lottery, on gambling, and so many other things. And that's a serious problem. That's why I talk is, yeah, you have a bit of laughter about this. But you know, the reason it's laughter is because we laugh at ourselves, because we do that as well. Sometimes we do stupid things like, you know, we look at the horoscope of the person we're going out with. You know, is that a good person? Are we matched? I don't believe in horoscopes ever since that one day. I was always dubious of horoscopes. But what, you know, and if you just read them in the newspapers, I mean, it's only like, you know, for 1 month. You know, I'm a Leo, you know, August. So you can't really believe in that stuff. But one day, for my birthday 1 year, 7th of August, somebody got a proper horoscope for me. You know, that was their birthday gift for me. And they read it out at Serpentine Monastery. And they read it out. This is a horoscope, what you can expect for next year for someone born on the 7th of August, 1951. And the horoscope reading began. This will be a very good year for romance. That's a cheeky thing to say to a monk. And it was not true either. You see, I'm still a monk. It didn't work. I don't believe those horoscope business. But do you believe the horoscope? Instead, we believe, as a monk, karma. Whatever the situation is, I can make something good of this. It might be a difficult day, but difficult days are where I can really learn a lot. They really challenge me. Well, people may be cruel to me, but that's where I can really increase my training in compassion and forgiveness. Yeah, it may be a year of sickness, but I learn so much about this body and how to look after it and how to relax it and how to make it peaceful so the sickness goes very quickly. So it's not bad luck. Whatever happens to me, I make it into good luck. Whatever happens. And that is called the law of karma. Whatever you're served, you can always make something good out of it. So I don't believe in these horoscopes anymore. If it's a good year for romance, and all these girls come to the monastery, I can just get some more nuns for the nuns' monastery. That's how I think. I can always turn it around to our advantage. So the superstitions which we have, even like holy water. Oh, I should mention one of my holy water stories. Now, Ajahn Chah spat on a general. This is what I did and got away with it. But I was very, very lucky. Every week on the moon days in these monasteries in Thailand where I trained, it was a very tough training. I told you many times about the disgusting food. But also once a week, we'd stay up all night meditating. We'd go without sleep for 24, 30 hours. That's very tough. Stay up all night meditating. When it came to dawn, you know, you were very tired. And also you'd go out into the forest to urinate. Yeah, there were toilets there, but you're living in a jungle. You just go out and just find a nice open space, squat down in Asian style. You've seen the Asian way that you squat down to urinate. That's how I did it. So I was squatting down, tired, in the first light of day, so it wasn't all that sort of clear. And as I started urinating, I thought I was urinating on a stick. And then the stick started to move. It wasn't a stick. It was a very venomous snake. And you girls can't understand this. Only men can understand this. That the most sensitive organ of the man's body was only about 3 inches from the fangs of a venomous snake. That was scary. But did that snake bite me? Not at all. It just slithered slowly under the urine. Because this was in a Thai Buddhist monastery. That snake thought it was being blessed with holy water from a nice monk. So he enjoyed every minute of it. That's why I never bit. But don't you try that. It has to be a monk's holy water, not yours. Otherwise, you get bitten. So we do these things, but be careful. And the worst superstitions is some of the things which are written in those holy books and make you do some really weird things which go against your heart. That's why when it comes to the superstitions of holy books, what to believe. What is the written word of God? I say, Voltaire said it's human reason. It's actually more than that. What is the truth? What is meaning? Because very often I've gone to schools, and these school children have this list of questions which they're asking all religions. And one of those questions they always ask, you know, as well as what's the Buddhist holy days? You know, what is the Buddhist holy scripts? Because, you know, this is what the schools think. Yeah, the Christians have the Bible, the Jewish people have the Old Testament, the Muslims have the Quran. What do the Buddhists have? What is their holy script? And I always tell them, he said, the Buddhist scriptures are in here. This is where you find the sacred texts in your own heart. You feel them. You experience them. So if you want to follow the Buddhist scriptures, the original, most honest and trustworthy. Don't read any book. Read your own heart. What do I mean by that? I mean, is this the right thing to do? Is this good? Is this pure? Is this holy? Is this spiritual? You read a book and you say, it's the right thing to do to stone an adulterer. You read your heart. No way, you can't do that. That's wrong. That hurts. That's unspiritual. That's bad. That's evil. And if only more people would read their hearts rather than reading books, we'd have a far more holy world, a spiritual world, a kind world, a forgiving world, a compassionate world, a peaceful world, a tolerant world. You should read your hearts rather than reading the books, even Buddhist books. Yeah, read those Buddhist books. They're good to read, but trust the heart more than anything else. Why? It's because that is where the truth is written. And that will stop so much superstition. As I said, the superstition of taking, that's one of the reasons I said that, not just to make you laugh, of shaking the incense stick. It's just belief that my granny did that, therefore it must be something in it. No, these books are written thousands of years ago. No, my father, my grandfather followed this, so there must be something in it. We do it without questioning. We do it without feeling what's in our hearts. And that has caused so much mischief in our world. And please, 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 never let Buddhism become a superstitious cult religion where you just do things because the monk said so, or because your parents did it, or because it's been done from time immemorial. The Buddha statue has to face east. You know, you can't point your feet at the monks. You can't sort of sleep while the monk's giving the talk. You get cursed. You can't keep your mobile phone on during the talk. It's bad luck. No, it's okay. The Buddhists are compassionate. You can all turn your mobile phones on. I don't care. But what happens is, when we follow other people, we follow books, we follow traditions blindly, now that becomes superstition. That's its meaning. And I've just given you many examples. Hopefully, if this teaching is going to make any sense in our modern world and really capture people and make them better people, freer people, please may it take away all those superstitions. How to do it in brief? Please learn how to read your heart. Not the books, not the traditions. Bow to a Buddha statue if you feel like it. You don't have to. Only if you know what you're doing and why. Thank you for listening. Okay, now we've got the questions. First of all, Sabine from Germany. These are streamed live all over the world. Why do Theravada monks have to give up music? Playing an instrument teaches devoted practice. Listening to music can open up the view. I know why I give up music and singing, because I can't sing for my life. I never actually got into chanting and whether the chanting works. My chanting works, especially my powerful chanting, is the best to scare away ghosts. That's why that I've gone to many houses which have been haunted and my chanting has worked. The reason is my chanting is so bad that no self-respecting ghost can stand it and they run away straight away. So a lot of times that the monks give up music because instead they have the beautiful music of silence. This is what we really get up to, stillness, peacefulness. But it doesn't mean that Buddhism or Theravada has to give up music. In fact, in many places, you know, just like Singapore and Malaysia, you can get this sort of the beautiful chants there of the Metta Sutta and other chants, you know, in English. In Sri Lanka, they have the same beautiful chanting, which is melodious. You know, you have the Gregorian monks. You know, sometimes their chanting gets to number one because it's incredibly beautiful and inspiring. So that's what the monks do sometimes, or the lay people. Beautiful chanting. That's our tradition of music. So, yeah, you can do that. Sue from New York State. How is belief in karma and superstition different from each other? Sorry, it might be a silly question. Because karma is something you can actually see and test out right now. Karma is what you do. So you can know what you're doing. Superstition is belief. Oh, some sort of power or some sort of unseen force is going to protect me. No, karma is what you do. An example is, some years ago, a Malaysian student here asked me to do some chanting for her in the community hall on a Saturday because the next one or two days she was going to do her exams in college. Superstition was the chanting would work. Karma is study works. And she failed. And we didn't know because she never came back here again, but we heard from our friend that she was going around Perth to her friend saying, these monks in Nolamara Temple are hopeless. They're really bad. They're not real monks. And the only reason why was because the chanting never worked. She failed. And she blamed us. So he blamed Ajahn Brahm. He's hopeless. You shouldn't go and support him. You know, I asked for some chanting to pass my exams and I failed. The point was, he'd never done any studies. So this is an example. The karma is like studying, opening up the books, going to the lectures. Superstition is, please, holy water, please, can you chant? So somehow or other, you know, my F grade goes into an A. Can't do that. Indira from Sri Lanka, does chanting protect you? If so, how? Thank you. There was this wonderful story of one of the Buddhist nuns. This was actually before she was a nun. She's been here before to visit and give a talk. But before she was a nun, she was a Buddhist, and she was hiking through the foothills of the Himalayas with her boyfriend, you know, somewhere in northern Nepal. And hiking, they're having a great time, beautiful scenery. They saw a nice cave, and they decided to sit down and rest and meditate. That's a bad thing to do in Nepal. If you see a cave, stay a long way from it. Her boyfriend sat on a rock above the cave. She sat right in front of it. That cave was the home of a bear. The bear came back and saw this woman standing in front of the cave and ran for her, attacked her. And those bears are very dangerous. And the bear's mouth got hold of her head and actually put his jaws right over her head, trying to crush her. And the boyfriend was hopeless. He didn't do a thing. He didn't know what to do. He was scared too. And what this girl did, you know, she was a Buddhist. She started chanting. And as soon as she started chanting, forget what she chanted, the bear opened up its grip, screamed and ran away. I don't know why. Maybe the bear was superstitious. But if that bear wasn't a Buddhist, a Christian, then she would have been killed. But I know there's a bear joke about that, but I won't say that. I said that joke about the man. He was attacked by the bear got him. And he was a devout Christian, and he sort of prayed, "Oh, look, please, you know, turn this bear into a Christian, a good Christian." And there was a flash of lightning, struck the bear, and the bear became a Christian. And the bear said, "For what I'm about to receive, may the Lord bless this food." Or something like that. You know that joke. Anyway, this was a real story. The bear sort of let go and ran away. And I remember later on she became a nun. I think she gave up hope with boyfriends after that. And she became a Buddhist nun. And one of the things she said was, it didn't hurt at all. You know, she's getting her head crushed by a bear, but it wasn't hurt. Because the dominant feeling, what was really nauseating, was the bear's bad breath. And that was sickening. And that's the only thing which you can remember, this terrible stench of a bear's bad breath, because obviously bears don't brush their teeth. And afterwards, I mean, she's got these scars around her scalp because, you know, she shaves her head as a Buddhist nun, you can see those scars. But the weird part of that story, she said she had headaches afterwards for about 6 months or a year. And they couldn't understand why, because the wounds had healed. There was no sort of real damage. But they gave her one of these CT scans of her brain. You know what they found? There was this little seedling growing inside. You know, the bear had been eating some sort of seedlings. And when it actually bit her, it actually injected a seed into her brain, and the little seedling was growing. She had a little tree growing inside her brain. If it was a Bodhi tree, that might have been something. But it was an ordinary tree, so they soon, you know, got the tree out, and her headache was gone. Interesting story. But anyway, how did I get into that? Shanti, yeah, it protected her because the bear was a Buddhist. But what really protects you instead of the chanting is your mindfulness and kindness. That protects you more than chanting will ever do. So, you know, if you're travelling tonight, you know, don't go chanting, may not have an accident, might not have an accident. Just pay attention to the road and don't go talking to the person sitting next to you. That's more important. That protects you. So there's many more things more powerful than chanting to protect you. And in fact, all the chanting really does, it encourages you. It's the same as the chanting in a football stadium. Come on, the Eagles. Come on, the Dockers. You know, those are the local two football teams in Perth. That actually has an effect, doesn't it? It encourages and motivates people. And that's a lot of time what the chanting does. It encourages you, fills you full of hope and inspiration. That is its majority power. Lastly, in Sri Lanka, that was Indira from Sri Lanka, another Neo from Sri Lanka. Wasn't Neo that person in The Matrix? Wow. We've got a message from the One. In Sri Lankan Buddhism has become largely about rituals, belief and superstitions, with nationalistic political power-based underpinnings. How can we fix this? How do you fix this? By going back to the real original teachings of the Buddhism. The Buddha was against superstitions also. Even that sometimes, this is in the Vinaya, the rules for the monks, that the monks, sometimes people would sneeze. And sometimes the monks would say something like, bless you. And the Buddha said, no, that's superstition. You don't need to say this. It's a sneeze, that's all. It doesn't kill anybody. If you don't say bless you, they're nothing better. They're nothing worse because of you say bless you. So it was one of the rules that monks aren't allowed to say that. A small rule, but it was just pointing out that the Buddha really wanted to get rid of these superstitions. But sometimes the Buddha used superstitions. This is the last story. I should have really mentioned this because this is a doozer. There was one nun's monastery, Bhikkhuni's monastery. It actually shows you just how people don't change. A Bhikkhuni's monastery. And one morning, one of the Bhikkhunis, one of the nuns, had the job of emptying the bucket at the latrine. You know, all of the night shit and urine. Now, there was a place she was supposed to empty that, but it was a bit too far away. So instead, she threw it over the monastery wall. And of course, Murphy's Law even happened in India 26 centuries ago. It's one of the most eternal laws, the law of Murphy. If it can happen, it does happen. And it did happen. There was a man on the opposite side of the wall. Not an ordinary man. This man was dressed up, ready to go and see the king. He had an appointment with the monarch to do some business. And of course, he was wearing the very, very best clothes. And there he was on the way to visit the king when he got a bucket load of shit all over him. And he knew where it came from that monastery with those nuns. At least they called themselves nuns. And this story, he said, these aren't real nuns. They're just a bunch of prostitutes, whores, terrible people. I'm going to teach them a lesson. And he was angry, as you'd imagine you would be. And he got a torch, like one of these flaming torches, because it was, you know, early in the morning. I'm going to burn down their monastery, because the monastery was made of wood and thatch, simple places to live, not like these very expensive things which people, you know, build for monks and nuns these days. Very simple buildings. I'm going to burn it down. And he went into that monastery with the intent to burn the whole thing down. And there was a gatekeeper. And this gatekeeper, this guy who was, you know, on the entrance door, said, what are you doing? I'm burning this place down. Look what they've done to me. You know, all dripping with this filthy brown stuff. And the doorman was a very smart guy, incredibly smart guy. He said, what? Hold on a minute. You've been blessed with shit from a nun? That's auspicious. That's incredibly lucky. That's where we get the phrase holy shit from. I made that up. That's not it. That's really lucky. Now, it's amazing, again, how superstitious some people actually are. This guy said, really? That's lucky? That's really lucky. How many people do you know have got that amazing good fortune? They said, you're blessed. These are holy nuns in here. That really is really, really auspicious. And the guy said, go and clean up. I'm sure that something very, very lucky is going to happen to you today. And he believed it. So he went home, had a shower, cleaned up, changed his clothes, went to the palace, and he did actually get this very, very lucrative contract, you know, from the king. And he went around after that saying, if you really want to have good luck, you go and ask to be blessed from some holy shit by the nuns. So anyone whose business is on the rocks, you go to Dhammasara Nuns Monastery. And of course the word got around to the Buddha. And when the Buddha heard it, he called those nuns over and said, "You're very, very lucky that you had this amazing gatekeeper, you know, who could convince this guy that your shit was holy." And as a result of that, that's one of the... What, how many is it? 316 nuns' rules, bhikkhunis' rules? 311. That is one of the 311 rules for a bhikkhuni, which she has to keep. You must not throw a bucket of shit over the monastery wall. It is. And that's where it comes from. But the Buddha actually used people's gullibility and superstition to save the monastery from being burnt down. That's a wonderful story. So those of you who think that reading the Buddha's scriptures is boring, you've got some really amazing stories in there. Just people are the same. They're always being the same. You know, general thing being spat on is lucky. Snake thing that being peed on is holy water from a monk. So you've got to be very careful. That's a superstition. So please, if you look at the original teachings, there's no such superstition. And if the rituals, that's all there are, then many people will just turn away from that type of Buddhism. It doesn't work. People do the chanting and they still have bad luck. People do all this ritual and it doesn't work. But they do the meditation, they do the listen to the teachings, they practice the precepts. They bow to a Buddha, remembering virtue, peace, compassion. That does work. That's why it grows in countries like Australia. Because it's a pure form without all the rituals. And that's the stuff which really works. So thank you, Neo, the one, Indira from Sri Lanka, Sue from New York, and Sabine from Germany.